And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, and I'll tell you who's not having a good Valentine's Day, Shane, and that's old Papa John's guy. Did you see this? You know, we don't get to do a whole lot of basketball on this podcast, but SEC basketball is heating up, so I've been paying a little bit closer attention to it this year. It's a little bit more exciting, and of course, the old Papa John's guy, old racist Papa John, that fucking guy, he got booted from Louisville, got his name taken off the stadium. I think he was on the board. He got kicked off the board. Huge Louisville homer. And for anyone that missed this, the other day, I believe it was Tuesday evening, LSU went into Kentucky, number 5 ranked Kentucky, and they zoom in to the bench, and there's damn Papa John, man, in his blue shirt. Did you see this, Shane?
I did see it, brother. I did see it. Loved it. I hate, dude, they dropped one, and now they think it's a curse, you know? Papa John's a curse, and I don't know how much you buy into that, but I will tell you, if you remember, Drake was sporting the Alabama shirt just a few days before the national championship game, and, you know, I remember all the way back when, what's her name? With Tony Romo. What was it? On the Dukes of Hazzard. She was the girl on Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, Jessica Simpson.
Yes, Jessica Simpson. She was the curse. So I think old Papa John, you know, he is not welcomed at Kentucky right now, especially this coming up Saturday.
All right, Shane, enough of those shenanigans, though. Let's, you ready to go around the league?
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league. Around the league.
We haven't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did, so, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week, all our play. I mean, it's just like, right, I mean, just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat. Lunch bell, let's get to work.
First topic, biggest thing in the SEC, I thought this week, came down Thursday morning. Todd Grantham, defensive coordinator there in Gainesville, he's staying. Cincinnati Bengals made him the priority. I had a good feeling that once reports were out there that Todd Grantham was staying in Cincinnati for a second day of interviews, which was on Wednesday, I knew if he didn't sign his damn contract by the second day, I mean, it said to me that the Gators had a good chance of keeping him, and that's exactly what happened. Florida gives an extension and a raise to Todd Grantham. He's going to make $1.8 million next year. What are your thoughts on Florida keeping their defensive coordinator?
Oh, Todd's getting paid, son. He's now, I think, top 5 in the country for a defensive coordinator. So, I mean, this isn't a small chunk of change. They really bought into him. And I'm seeing a lot of things online, Third and Grantham, and, you know, a bunch of Florida Gators kind of bashing him. But I think he's great, man. I mean, for what you're doing down there, what he was able to do last year. Now, did you lose the Kentucky game? Yes, but there was a lot of games like the Mississippi State game or the Tennessee game. I mean, they had 10 turnovers in that one. Or
LSU. Against LSU.
How many times did you walk away from their games and say, you know what, that offense won it, you know? Felipe didn't win a lot of games. That defense did. So I think if you're a Florida fan, you should be happy at Todd sticking around.
Yeah, this is one of the more interesting ones. And I obviously know he's got a history there at Georgia. You know, the Georgia fans have soured on him. Seems like Georgia fans sour on all their damn coordinators until they go somewhere else and have success. But they still have it out for Todd Grantham, which is understandable. By the end of his tenure, was not doing well there. But that was so long ago, Shane. That's almost like Tennessee fans having it out for Bob Shoup when he's down at Mississippi State just killing it. So, I don't know. I think this is huge for Florida. I think it's huge for the momentum. Obviously, Dan Mullen's an offensive guy. He completely, you know, puts the defense in Todd Grantham's hands. So, you know, that's always an important hire by Dan Mullen. I think he's got his perfect fit in a defensive coach there in Todd Grantham. And, you know, while I had people coming at me a lot, you know, the Gators gave up a lot of yards. They gave up some points, particularly in SEC play. I think that speaks more to the fact that Todd Grantham didn't have a ton to work with. He had some really good players, but some of them were unheralded, and he's going to make a guy like Ja'Kai Polite a first-round pick who, you know, he was nowhere near that radar last year, and they just didn't have the depth. So now that they got the depth, I think Florida's defense is just going to get better in 2019.
I do too, man. I do too. I think good days are ahead for Florida.
All right, Shane, speaking of a defensive coordinator toying with the NFL, Matt House, we talked about this on the last episode. Matt House is leaving now Lexington. This is a damn weird one where Kansas City, it was reported he was leaving for Kansas City. Then it was reported, actually Kentucky confirmed that he was returning. Now Matt House going back to Kansas City, going back to be a linebackers coach. So Wildcats losing their defensive coordinator. And we hit the nail on the head on our last episode, Shane, talking about, you know, why some of these coaches may want to, I don't want to say take a demotion because it's still going to the NFL, but it is interesting to see a defensive coordinator in the SEC accepting a position coach in the position in the NFL. And Mark Stoops was on Kentucky Sports Radio after this announcement had come out that Matt House was leaving. He was, you know, he says the relationship there is fine between he and House, but he was asked directly, why is this happening essentially? And here's what Stoops had to say. You're going to see more of this. It's coming down to lifestyle. You can never blame someone for wanting more free time. This job will absolutely consume people. We have no downtime. So when you hear those comments from Mark Stoops, Shane, I mean, do you understand why Matt House would make this jump?
Oh, dude, I'd be all over it because I couldn't do it. I couldn't be on the phone. I mean, because you got to remember, these are kids. Most of the shit you're doing is going to be late at night, you know, texting, right, tweeting, messaging, you know, whatever, phone calls. I don't know. I just think that it would just, like he said, absolutely consume you. So if I had an opportunity to go to the NFL, that's the route I'm going to go. And it kind of makes you wonder just how many great linebacker coaches or quarterback coaches are in the NFL that would excel and be, you know, fantastic as a coordinator in college football, but just don't want to deal with it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have an interesting offseason here in Kentucky. This was a move. I know Kentucky fans were excited to keep Matt House. Now that he's leaving, they've yet to name a defensive coordinator. Looks like they may promote from within, which is not necessarily a bad decision, particularly with Kentucky having such an outstanding defense last year. So you got to think there's people on staff there that know how to run the system. But, you know, the big thing in Lexington and obviously around the SEC, a lot of SEC fans predicting Kentucky to take a step back, Shane. That's one thing, you know, that's going to be the big challenge for Kentucky in 2019. And Mark Stoops, he must just love doing these radio appearances because he did another one here on Thursday morning with SEC This Morning, the Sirius XMU channel. And he was asked about the consistency of his program, the maintaining the success and going a step further. That's something they've done every single year. How can they do that coming off a 10-3 season? So here's Mark Stoops on just that.
Getting to this point was one challenge, but being able to sustain it is a totally different point.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's a real challenge to sustain that and to take another step. You know, we're very proud of the fact that the 6 years that I've been here, we're the only program in the country that's never gone backwards. We've either stayed the same or we've improved every year for the 6 years, and we're the only place that can say that. Now it's going to be an even greater challenge to take it to another level. And, you know, that's that's what we have to do. Our players have to understand and go back and learn from the history and see the example that the seniors that we had last year and the leadership that we had and learn from all the good things we did, but also constantly strive to push ourselves to go to even higher heights, and that's what the challenge is to stay hungry and continue to work extremely hard every day and to really focus on things. And I know you guys hear that from every head coach that you talk to, because it's so true. To concentrate on today, and we had workouts already first thing this morning, and that's what I challenged them with, is let's finish off the day, let's have a great day and attack everything that you have in front of you today the best way you can, and that's really how you have to approach it.
All right, Shane, I know last season, I think you picked every damn Kentucky game wrong. So the Kentucky fans are dying to know, how does Cousin Shane predict Kentucky's 2019 season goes? You don't have to give me an exact number or anything, but just what are your thoughts when you hear Mark Stoops talking about maintaining the success they've had there in Lexington?
Well, first off, I would like to talk about the success. He said the last 6 years, so you got to remember, when he came in, they won two games, then five, then five, then seven, then seven, then, of course, the Big Ten last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. But to say that you're going to stay the same or get better, now you got a new benchmark. Is he going to get 10 games? Now, that did include the bowl win, so we're looking at 9 in the SEC or in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, there's just no way. But then I look at their schedule, man, and I don't want to claim them as the East champs, but I'm telling you what, dude, they got a pretty sweet schedule coming up. I'm just going to read the non-SEC teams here. Toledo, Eastern Michigan. Let's see. Let's go down. UT Martin. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Louisville. So I'm not threatened by any of those. Now, you got your typical East teams, South Carolina's, the Florida's that they beat last year. Mississippi State is the West. Mm-hmm. Arkansas is their other West. So I'm looking at this schedule, Mike, and I was counting them out last year, I'm not going to do that this year, because I really love the way things are lining up here. And the big one, because the one obviously I don't think they have a shot at would be Georgia, but Missouri and Florida are at home. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
even their toughest games are going to be right there in Kentucky.
I noticed you didn't want to touch on that Tennessee game, but
you got to have a couple ales, Mike.
Well, that's terrible. That's terrible news for Wildcat fans, Shane, because if Cousin Shane is on board with Kentucky in 2019, they may just go winless here in the SEC. That's the Cousin Shane streak.
Well, I'm telling you, man, I love the defense. So if nothing's changing, you got somebody coming in from within, hopefully there won't be much change there. The running back, obviously, Benny Snell is one of the greatest. He's the greatest to go through Kentucky as far as running the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this forces them to do what kind of caught up to him last year, and that's not be so one-dimensional. So you got Wilson back. Even though I'm not a huge fan, the kid is lightning fast, and he can make plays all over the field. So I'm eager to see what kind of product they put on the field next year.
Yeah, and they ought to just play that damn Cash Daniel Super Bowl video before every game and just get
over
jacked
and
up.
Over, man.
All right, staying in the SEC East, Shane, let's go to Columbia, Missouri, where Barry Odom, your boy Barry, he's had some comments here directed specifically. He didn't say Jeremy Pruitt, I don't believe, but he said the Tennessee coaching staff, where old Odom's pissed off. Remember, obviously Missouri is currently under the one-year bowl ban, which they have officially appealed today. They said that's going to take minimum 6 months. Judging by what happened with Ole Miss there, it could take up to a year. So that's kind of the time frame we're looking here, 6 months to a year. But obviously Missouri's got a current one-year bowl ban, which means their seniors can transfer without sitting out. And according to Barry Odom, there's one SEC staff that's calling every day. He's calling these seniors every day, and it's Tennessee. Here's what Barry Odom had to say, according to Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports. Everybody's going to have a bad day. You combine that with somebody that, who do we beat, 51-17 last year? Tennessee? Yeah, those guys. They're nonstop reaching out daily saying, hey, come here. The grass is not always greener somewhere else. That just sounds like a nerdy ass comment. But I got to say this, Shane, I detect that Odom is very threatened here. He's even making up scores. The Tigers did not beat Tennessee 51-17. They beat Tennessee 50-17. So he added extra point.
Thank you. And we're wondering why Pruitt's trying to get them. I mean, maybe we don't want to lose by 50-17 this year, and you can't do that if you don't have seniors on your team. So I think it's a smart play by Pruitt. So I assume you
have no issue with Tennessee, whoever, if it's Jeremy Pruitt or the Tennessee coaching staff, reaching out to these seniors, right?
Hell no. How did Kelly Bryant get up there? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure they were calling him every day. So this happens all the time, and just because Tennessee's more persistent at it, we love the transfer portal, Mike. I mean, we live for that. So absolutely, I'm not surprised. In fact, I'm more surprised that we haven't got anybody to move yet. So mm-hmm. I don't know if we're waiting a spring ball or – you know, they're kind of waiting for the dust to settle. But when they get confirmation that there is no bowl game, I don't know, Mike. Don't be surprised if a few do jump ship.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it both ways here. I can understand if I'm a Missouri fan, I'm pretty pissed off. If I'm a Tennessee fan, I'm saying, hell, that's what it takes to succeed in the SEC. You want to know why Tennessee is landing, you know, a top, what is it, like 11, 12 recruiting class, why they're beating out Alabama for a couple of recruits. It's because of this relentless nature. You kind of just seeing behind the curtain here a little bit, I think, but they're not breaking any NCAA regulations. Yes, they are trying to poach. I made the same point you made there where Missouri is bringing in a graduate transfer senior quarterback to help them do the same, and I got absolutely destroyed on Reddit. So the perception is this is different, I guess, just because these players are not currently in the transfer portal necessarily. I'm not technically sure how that works. I guess the NCAA just put them all in it in terms of being able to be contacted by rival teams, rival opponents in the division there. But, you know, I see it both ways. And I would say this, Shane, because I don't know if it happened more after this NCAA situation or more after Missouri season last year, but there were plenty of Missouri fans not buying into the Barry Odom, you know, as their leader, as a coach. But following this bowl ban and his, you know, his strong stance against it and his strong stance here against Tennessee trying to get his players and this appeal, this has rallied the fan base. And I think Barry Odom right now with Missouri fans is more popular than ever. Could you argue that, obviously, that he does not want the ball ban. Hopefully they get it overturned. But could this turn out to be something that's somewhat of a net positive here for Odom?
Absolutely, man. One of the teams in the you're looking at SEC as far as people going to the games, actual attendance. You know, Missouri is one of the lowest. So if this can rally some of those fans to actually come out and support their team, then who knows? Maybe Missouri wins in the long run with this thing.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking about Kentucky and their schedule. Missouri's lines up really nice too, particularly at the start there. I mean, they do have to open on the road at Wyoming. That's pretty weird to see an SEC team do, but you got to think Missouri's going to be a heavy favorite there. They play West Virginia at home, then they come home for Southeast Missouri before they get in the SEC play. And some of their SEC teams, the first ones they play, home for South Carolina, Ole Miss at home, at Vanderbilt, at Kentucky. I mean, there is a chance if Missouri lives up to the hype, they're going to beat all these teams, and they're going to have 2 weeks to prepare going into that Georgia game with an 8-0 record. I know we're laughing at Missouri. There's chairman here. We're going to play a clip from him in just a moment talking about them winning the SEC East. But if this can rally the fan base, rally the team, this could turn to be something of a net positive, I think, particularly if Missouri gets this bowl ban lifted.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, I mean, still, there's so much time, so many moving pieces right now. So as great as we're looking at Missouri, if they do lose – even if it's three or four seniors, if it's Kelly Bryant, for instance, I mean, you're talking about a totally different ball club next year. So If I am a Missouri fan, I'm worried to death, but I am showing as much love as I can, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, Shane, let's go to this clip because I saw this. This came out on Thursday. I couldn't believe the unintentional comedy of this this video. But Missouri put out a video featuring their chairman of the board. He's a guy by the name of John Sundvoid. And this is the guy we read his letter, you know, when all this stuff came out with the NCAA, where he wrote to Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, saying, you know, when we win the SEC East, let us play in the SEC championship, do the right thing, whatever he said. This is that guy speaking to the team. And if Missouri was fired up going into this meeting, Shane, they are no longer fired up after speaking to this gentleman.
When we win the SEC East next year, what you're going to look back on is think, okay, it's not about the stuff outside. It's about your focus inside.
It's going to be a great season. And again, I look forward when we win the SEC East, it's going to be a good run.
When we win the SEC East next year, I will salute you guys and simply say to you, M-I-Z.
Z-O-U.
Thank you.
All right, if you could feel the anticlimactic ending, that's because that's how that really portrayed. We did not edit that down to make it seem, you know, worse than what it was. Thoughts on this guy's really doubling down on his damn Missouri's going to win the East pick here, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm telling you. Unfortunately, this is a video, so you can't see it. And I just want to let the listeners know that he's not just talking to the kickers. The entire team is there, and they're exhausted. And I'll tell you what, there's been a couple times John's talked, and maybe if you don't want these seniors going anywhere, maybe he should get less mic time, Mike. They're going to win the East.
Oh, man. Well, speaking of NCAA sanctions, Shane, Ole Miss finally moving on from the NCAA shenanigans, all that stuff they got into, but it comes at a cost. I just want to get your thoughts on this because they were asked to vacate 33 wins between the 2010 and 2014 season. And this obviously goes back to all the, you know, players getting paid and what have you. And apparently what this is, they were asked to count the games in which players participated that should have been ineligible, so the NCAA stripped some of those wins. What do you think of, not necessarily Ole Miss, I mean, I guess if you want to comment on Ole Miss, but my real question for you, Shane, is what in the hell is the point of doing this? Like, who does this hurt? It just seems like an empty penalty because the fans still got to experience these games. I mean, they still happen in everyone's mind. I mean, I remember that big win over Alabama they had at home, so you can never take that away from my memory that, like, it just didn't happen, you know?
Right. I mean, and it's not like they won the SEC, you know what I'm saying, or a national championship during this time frame, so there's really no banners coming down. So, no, take it. I'm sure nobody's thinking twice about this thing right now.
Yeah, so let me ask you this, Shane. Let's – hypothetical. I'm not saying this – clearly I'm not saying anything's going wrong here, but – what if Tennessee next season played with a couple guys that, you know, 10 years from now ruled ineligible? Tennessee has to strip the wins from the record, but they beat Florida, they beat Georgia, and they beat Alabama next year. Would you take that trade-off?
Strip it.
I mean, who cares? Like, it still happened. You know what I mean?
I was still there. I still got to watch. I still went on the field and helped tear down the goalpost. You know what I'm saying? So, no, yeah, you can vacate the wins, that's fine. But unless you're like a ball club, like, I don't know, like Alabama or Michigan, one of those that's got, like, they're trying to work on the most wins ever, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Ole Miss is not in that level, so I don't see why it would matter. That's the only other thing that would be a factor for me.
And the only other note I have here of Ole Miss, Shane, defensive backs coach, they actually had two last year, but one of them has been let go. Jason Jones will not return for 2019. Just wanted to give fans a little update on that. I would assume this is a Mike McIntyre decision, you know, kind of letting him keep his defensive staff how he wants it.
Yeah, aren't you kind of surprised that he's stuck around this long? I mean, he's been down there for I think he's been down there for like 8 years or something like that. But the defense was horrible last year. Mm-hmm. And I thought if anybody was going to get fired last year, it would have been him. So he was listed as co-defensive coordinator. So, yeah, like you said, this is obviously McIntyre's ship, you know, and so they got rid of him.
All right, Shane, let's jump to the other Columbia, South Carolina. There's a little bit of a sad news here. Defensive lineman Josh Belk, former five-star recruit. He was a U.S. Army All-American just last year, this time last year, 2018. And this is the guy, Shane, this is a weird little saga here where he signed with Clemson, he enrolled at Clemson, and then after spring break left, went to South Carolina. The Gamecocks had to appeal to get a waiver, which he eventually was granted. And he played in 5 games, I believe, this year. And now he's walking away from the game. He's getting, I believe he's had some kind of injury to where he just has to kind of walk away from football. But that's a tough break for him and a tough break for South Carolina when, you know, obviously they don't have a ton of 5 stars on their roster, particularly on the defensive line there.
Well, you know, I thought this was going to be a bigger get than it was last year, and it just didn't really pan out. Now, I did read up a little bit on him, and they said that it was something like a fractured vertebra or something, and, you know, got some results from an MRI that he just, you know, decided to, you know, pursue a different life sport, you know, just get out of football altogether. But one interesting thing I did see, are you familiar with Mike Uva? Is that how you say his name, UVA?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was reporting on Belk that saying that he was having a hard time getting along with the team, and that factored into his decision to leave. So they said this may be something to do more with passion in the game. So maybe he just wasn't feeling football anymore.
Yeah, and Josh Belk, when he initially left Clemson there before going to South Carolina, I know there were some other big schools trying to get him. Tennessee and Georgia were among them. So, you know, I think you might be onto something there, Shane. If there was one, of course, there are several people reporting that he's injured his vertebra or whatever, but I wonder if that's maybe something that's being just thrown out there to kind of, I don't want to say conceal what's really going on, but it just seems like there's so much going on here. Maybe that's being used as an excuse and give this guy some time. Maybe he comes back to football. I think 5-star linemen, schools will always make an exception for them. And clearly, as long as this guy has not done anything inappropriate, you know, off the field, I think he's going to get another look down the line if he wants one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the clock's ticking, man. He's already been at 2 schools. So, you know, if he is going to take a year off and get his mind right, then sometimes that's what you need. You need a little break or something like that, and you come back. But I don't know, man. I think this may be the last time we hear from him.
All right, Shane, a little update on Mississippi State here. Not really the team, obviously, but Jeffrey Simmons has torn his ACL. We hate to hear that. He did that prepping, you know, for the NFL draft. And from what I understand, Shane, you know, he was down in Florida, I believe it was.
Boca Raton, down there with old
Kiffin.
You sure sweating at a strip club?
But what I was going to ask you, Shane, I'm a big believer in this. I know you're an NFL guy, so maybe you'll shed some light here. But my belief is for a guy, and obviously not all the prospects can do this, but a guy like Jeffrey Simmons, who is basically a lock, or at least he was a lock for the first round, why do they compete in the, you know, these things? In my opinion, if I was him, I would stay in shape. I would meet with the teams, but I wouldn't do anything that would put my body in harm's way the way he did. And I know this is training to help himself, but how much could he possibly even help himself, you know, in doing these drills and running? I mean, he's a big man. Yeah. He's not going to run the 40 and, you know, drastically help his time. What would you say if an elite player just said, to hell with all this, you know, I'm not doing the combine, I'm not doing the pro days, whatever, like just pop in my tape. I'm an elite player. I'll meet with you and discuss anything you want to discuss, but I am not risking my body, which is how I'm going to make a living until I get paid.
Unless he was doing this for that reason alone. I mean, obviously this guy's missing. He was missing the combine for a reason. He's got some baggage, and maybe this was for audition tapes to send to NFL teams, and you know, because he was shooting for a high draft spot. So the one thing that I have been seeing, I can't remember the article I saw it on, but there was three or four teams that were looking at him, came back and said he's no longer a first round pick. So that's. That kind of sucks. So he's no longer. I mean, he went from trying to be a top draft, you know, pick to now he's probably going to be drafted in the second or third.
Yeah. Now the only silver lining, I guess, if you want to call it, he wouldn't obviously make as much money initially, but the first round picks, from what I understand, they basically are locked in with their team for 5 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And the later you go, like if you're a second rounder, you're only locked in for 4 or 3. So there's a possibility, you know, he comes around because he may have to miss most of next season now because of this.
Yeah.
And he could come around to that second contract to be really fresh. And I mean, he may make a ton here in 3 or 4 years. But yeah, I just hate it for him because, you know, he's an elite prospect. And I think for a defensive lineman like this, I don't think it's going to end his career by any means. You know, I think if you're a running back receiver, it could be far more devastating than if you're just a lineman.
Yeah, for sure. And but you see them all the time. Some of them just never bounce back too. So you'd hate to see that. Sometimes you get that injury, and trust me, when you have a serious injury, I had one before, and it's all you think about when you're out there is just that knee giving out on you again. So sometimes it gets psychological. So. If he could get past that and, you know, get back on the, I don't think any team's going to try to rush him in next year. Just let him rehab, get ready. He probably won't see him any in 2019, but he'll be ready to go the following year.
All right, Chad, let's jump to Nashville, where we had quite a bit of coaching news this week, where Vanderbilt very quietly, they promoted their quarterbacks coach, Gary Gadowski, to offensive coordinator. I think this is a big move here, Shane. They also hired running back Tim Horton, who a lot of people should be familiar with. He's the former Auburn running back coach. They hired Devin Fitzsimmons from the Detroit Lions, and they hired Nick Eason from the Tennessee Titans. And I'll tell you why I like all these hires. Shane Gadowski, you know, obviously they lost their offensive coordinator Andy Lugwid to Utah, and I just think the way Vanderbilt's offense is set up, it's a pro style. It's not an easy offense. You know, that one took a few years to get going there in Nashville, and they had Kyle Shermer basically the entire time there. So switching philosophies or switching coaches that doesn't know the personnel, I think that could have really set back Vanderbilt going into next year. I think this is the perfect scenario if you're going to lose your coordinator to just promote your quarterback coach, who he's been an offensive coordinator at 3 schools, so he already knows how to handle the job. He knows the players. I really like this move. And then Tim Horton, the running backs coach, like I said, he was at Auburn. He's twice coached SEC Offensive Player of the Year at Auburn, so he's a big-time running backs coach. He knows what he's doing there. And he also has a little bit of experience coaching special teams, and he's also at one point coached the special teams player of the year at Auburn. So this guy's very, very well respected all around the SEC, knows what he's doing. I think that's a big hire. Just Fitzsimmons, I know, was very successful there with the Detroit Lions. Never a coordinator or anything, but he's not going to be a coordinator here at Vanderbilt. And Nick Eason, I know Tennessee had one of the best defensive lines against the rush last season. So I think all across the board here, you're looking at some upgrades for Derek Mason's crew.
Absolutely. And I think the Gary hire is probably my favorite one. Just like you said, he's been there. He's been with Kyle this whole time. So nothing's really going to be changing on the offensive side of the ball. They've got some serious weapons there. And he knows them. He knows their weaknesses. He knows what they're good at. So I think that's going to just play huge. And if you look at some of the smaller schools that he coached with, you know, he was breaking records with some of these quarterbacks. So he's done some great things at the smaller schools.
All right, Shane, final thing I got around the league, not associated with any team, but basically all of them, really, if you think about it. And this was just an odd story here. But for anyone that missed it, a couple weeks ago, ESPN ran a story on the Cleveland Browns. They really went behind the scenes there and just showed what a shit show it is there in Cleveland under the new owner Jimmy Haslam. And I know that's a name you're very familiar with, Shane. Any Tennessee fan is. He's basically the damn GM of the Tennessee Vols. He gets what he wants. He's a mega booster up there at Tennessee. I don't know that's necessarily the case anymore with Philip Fulmer there, but it has been in years past. There's a big reason why Tennessee has been sucking for a decade. I think of a lot of it ties back to Haslam. And if you go read this ESPN article, you quickly find out why the Cleveland Browns been sucking for years and years, because this guy's just, I mean, he's just running it into the ground, has no idea what he's doing. But anyway, so ESPN runs this article, and Jimmy Haslam also owns what's known as Pilot Flying J Company. They're the Pilot gas stations there, and they sponsor the SEC Network with apparently millions of dollars goes to SEC Network through Pilot J. And Pilot J's pulling the plug, man. And they sponsor Paul Feinbaum, Laura Rutledge, all these people, the SEC Network. I just think it's kind of funny that Jimmy Haslam, once this hit piece came out on him, the money dries up pretty quick there, Shane.
Yeah, I wonder who gets fired over this one. Like, I got a great idea. Let's do an article on the Browns, which, I mean, which is kind of stupid. It's not like the Browns obviously weren't a bad team. You know what I'm saying? I mean, You could see the track record. You could see the wins and losses. And obviously they did a little bit better this season, but this was kind of stupid. You don't, what they say, shit where you eat, you know, that's what this was, this whole article. So I'm not going to say if Jimmy wants to come on board here, and we'll be a Pilot Flying J podcast, brother.
I do want to say one thing about that story, Shane. If you've not read it, or anyone out there has not read it, it's worth reading just for this one part. Apparently, they're at the social media team there with the Cleveland Browns. They really wanted everyone in the building to know how fans were tweeting about the team. So they would broadcast tweets, you know, with like a huge projector all over the building. And one day, one of those geniuses, they had the idea to broadcast any tweet with hashtag DP. And they meant for dog pound, but they ended up getting double penetration. And they said this thing was blasting all over the Cleveland Browns facility for over 20 minutes. They had to pull the plug on the giant projector. But that just kind of goes to show what's going on behind the scenes there in Cleveland.
Whoops.
All right, Shader, how about this? I thought this was pretty interesting. Now, I don't put a ton of stock into this, but I still wanted to talk about it. ESPN has debuted their 2019 Football Power Index rankings, and these rankings have been known to be very hit or miss, in my opinion. I mean, this was the rankings that put Tennessee's 2016 team favored in every single game, and we all know how that turned out. I mean, that's just one example. They've time and time again, yeah, they've been proven wrong, but they also say Alabama's going to win every year, and they basically do, so they must know something's up. But just wanted to run down this list of where they rank every SEC team, and this is nationally ranked. A couple of these are really surprising. Obviously, we'll start with Alabama, which is not number one. Clemson was number one, but Alabama's number two. Georgia's number three. LSU, number four, a little surprising there. Florida, number eight. Auburn, number nine. Texas A&M, number 11. And here's the shocker, Shane. Tennessee, 15 in the nation. Mississippi State, number 16. South Carolina, number 19. Missouri, number 20. Kentucky, number 30. Ole Miss, number 41, Vanderbilt, 51, and finally Arkansas down the list at 58. Thoughts on that, Shane? And I know you probably fell out of your chair when you saw Tennessee at 15.
Well, at first I was like, what kind of list is this? You know, I saw it come across, and then the more I read up on it, I was like, all right, I kind of like it. So I'm not going to get too carried away. I mean, obviously – they have been wrong in the past, like you said. Mm-hmm. But what I thought was even more interesting was the fact that we had five teams in the top 10, 10 teams in the top 20. I mean, that just shows you how strong this conference is. So I don't know how it's going to play out, but I would love to see Tennessee ranked at 15th. Won't hurt my feelings.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one of the biggest things they factor into this list, Shane, is talent. You know, basically, obviously going off recruiting rankings. And you know, there's no secret. The SEC loaded in recruiting rankings. They dominated every year. So I think that's a big part of this. And yes, you know, you may have a team like Tennessee at 15, Mississippi State 16, you know, South Carolina 19. Those are surprising, but these teams are all going to play each other and knock each other down. So I don't know. I don't necessarily buy these rankings, like I said, but it is something interesting to talk about. And I was very surprised. I was thinking Tennessee maybe could have been top 25, but 15, that was a shocker to me. All right, Shane, how about this? I wrote an article this week. I got some blowback, so I'm expecting some from you as well. But this is something I like to do every offseason. This is a predicting an all-SEC breakout team. And I tried to really make this clear, but I guess I didn't make it clear enough. I didn't want to pick anyone that had been named to an all-SEC first or second team during their career. So these are just players outside of that that could make it. So I picked one player for every position. I'm going to run down my list, Shane, and then you can rip me apart as soon as we're done here. But for my tight end, Shane, I'm going with Jared Pinkney from Vanderbilt. Left tackle, Sadiq Charles, LSU. Right tackle, Jedrick Wills from Alabama. Guard, Cade Mays from Georgia. Guard, Jerome Carvin from Tennessee. Nick Buchanan at center from Florida. At receiver, I got Courtney Davis from Texas A&M. The other receiver position, I got Justin Jefferson from LSU. Quarterback, Kellen Mond. Running back, Keyshawn Vaughn from Vanderbilt. Other running back, Larry Roundtree from Missouri. And Rakeem Boyd, the other running back. I went with three running backs. SEC loves to run the ball, so got to throw my Arkansas guy there. All-purpose, Anthony Schwartz from Auburn. Let's just do it through my offense for now, Shane. You got any critiques there?
Critiques? I really don't, man. I mean, as controversial as I like to be, Mike, you know, some of these, I think he hit the nail on the head. I was kind of curious about Cade Mays, obviously, just because it wasn't like he was a full-time starter all season long. Maybe that one stood out to me a little bit. But I like the Keyshawn Vaughn, the Roundtree, Rakeem Boyd, three of my favorites right there. So I love that. And I think if Gus watches any videos this year, he's got to get Schwartz the ball more. So I'd love to see him, you know, not only in special teams, but just in offense in general.
Now, what about I think the big one that everyone always keys on when you're talking about teams like this is the quarterback position. Kellen Mond, obviously, when you go back to look at his season, it was really a lot more up and down than I remembered at first glance. Obviously, I think people think of that Clemson game. He was awesome against Clemson. He was great against LSU there at the end, but very inconsistent in between. Do you think there's a chance in year two under Jimbo Fisher that Kellen Mond takes a big step forward in this game? It's kind of like I'm predicting here.
There's a chance. Let me ask you, though, out of the quarterbacks not listed in the SEC, obviously you can't include Tua. You can't include Fromm, right? Who else you got that is excluded from this list, or is that it?
That was it. And actually, Jake Fromm has never been named to an all-SEC team, so I thought about just picking him, but I thought that was too easy, and you and I have both been on record saying that he's the number two quarterback in the SEC, so I just thought it would be stupid if I included him.
Yeah, okay. I don't know, man. Do you see anybody other than Kellen Mond? Let's just take him out for a second, just taking that next step. Do you see somebody like, and I don't want to sound like a homer, but Jarrett Garantano, do you think that's a possibility?
That was my next guy up. And the reason being I didn't include him is I'm not really sure that I have faith in the offensive line or the receivers. Not saying either one is bad, but, you know, it remains to be seen if they have game-breaking receivers, and it clearly remains to be seen what they have at offensive line. So while I think Garantano may already be, you know, knocking at the door of this, he just can't show it if he doesn't have an offensive line, he doesn't have any weapons. So those are obviously two big question marks for me.
What about we're just talking here. What about Kelly Bryant? I mean, we have seen what he's been able to do at Clemson, and he's going to have a lot of weapons there at Missouri, and mm-hmm. we've already talked about their schedule. I mean, do you see that as a potential quarterback breakout this year?
Maybe, Shane, but I've decided after last offseason, it just seems like all these grad transfer quarterbacks, they're just far more hype than they pan out to be.
Yeah.
And I think everyone gets in their head they might be getting Russell Wilson, and I just don't think there's many of those guys. I mean, you look at the Washington State quarterback that tore it up, Gardner Minshew. I mean, that guy was resigned to be Alabama's third or fourth stringer. You know what I mean? Like, that's just so rare, and no one was talking about that guy. He almost won the damn Heisman last year. So these quarterback transfers, graduate transfers specifically, it just seems like they're a total crapshoot, and more often than not, they never live up to the hype outside of Russell Wilson.
I got you.
All right, Shane, as for my defense, all defensive team breakout, I got Nick Coe from Auburn. That guy's awesome. This is the only true freshman I'm putting high expectations on this guy. Defensive lineman Antonio Alfano from Alabama. He's their big recruit. He says he's already gained 17 pounds since being on campus. Defensive lineman Darrell Taylor for Tennessee. Defensive lineman Javon Kinlaw, South Carolina. Linebacker Kaleon Chazon for LSU. Linebacker Errol Thompson, Mississippi State. Linebacker Anthony Hines, Texas A&M. Defensive back Patrick Surtain from Alabama. Defensive back Tyson Campbell, Georgia. Defensive back J.C. Horn from South Carolina. And finally, defensive back Trey Dean from Florida.
Well, why are you so – I mean, first off, I want to start with Nick Coe. It seems like every time I was watching an Auburn game, he was about to get a sack or he was getting one. So I could definitely see Nick Coe taking a step forward. But let me ask you, on Alfano, I mean, mm-hmm. what makes you think that a true freshman is going to be – I mean, we haven't even seen this guy suit up yet. Why would you think he would be the standout?
Well, I just really – based on what I've seen, which is admittedly not a ton. You know, I've just watched mm-hmm. his highlights and what have you, and I watched him at these – I believe it was – he was at the – I want to say the Army All-American camp. Maybe.
Yeah.
I always get those confused. But I've seen him there – and just based on some of these recruiting people just saying this guy is just really blown up. Once they, I think he was I don't want to say a low because it's kind of stupid to say, but a low-level four-star when he went to some of these camps. And then by the end of it there at the end, he was number two player in the nation, I think. Mm-hmm. It just seems to be the next line of a great Alabama lineman. They've obviously losing Quinnen Williams, and I think – I don't know if they really have that next dominant lineman on their roster. I just really think he's going to come in and, I don't know, I think he'll be the next one there at Alabama.
What would you think of somebody like LSU's Fehoku?
Yeah, I mean, I thought about including him, Shane. I know he got banged up. I believe he missed the bowl game, and he announced he's coming back, you know, so he's going to be a key cog there for LSU. It's just... You know, as good as he is, it's kind of hard for those nose tackle type guys to really break out and make all SEC teams. Not saying it can happen.
Right.
I mean, we just saw maybe the most dominant player in the damn NFL last year was basically a nose tackle. So it can happen. I don't know. It's tough for me to see that one. What about you?
Well, I'm always a huge fan of him. Not to mention, I love the dance they do before the games and everything, but he's just such a big body, and he does what he needs to do when he's at LSU, and that's just eat up blocks. And sometimes they don't get as much loving as they deserve, but this is one of the best guys as far as freeing up your linebackers. I mean, we talked about LSU linebackers last year, and a lot of that had to do with him, you know, taking double teams. So that's one I'd definitely like to get on the list for sure.
Sounds like you're just making your picks off damn dance moves, Shane.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, ever since we got a old boy from California, you know, I've been practicing my what do you call them? See, I haven't been practicing that much, so I need to Google Polynesian dance, you know.
What about your boy Darrell Taylor, Shane? Do you think he could really make that jump in year two under Jeremy Pruitt and his defensive coaching staff? Because you know, at times he flashed. He looked like one of the most outstanding players in the SEC. And then in other games, he just disappeared. So I'm looking for him to be more consistent next year.
Well, I didn't want to say it. I didn't want everybody to say, oh, Shane talks about Tennessee all the time. But obviously, that's the one I would have picked if I was doing this list, because I just think the talent's there. Mm-hmm. And I think now with the new coaches and, you know, full off season with Pruitt and them, I think we're going to see big things from both wide receiver or both cornerbacks. So this may be a pretty good looking defense next year. But like you said, there was way too many inconsistencies last year. There was some you're just saying, oh my God, the future's bright. And then the other times you're like, who was that? You know, mm-hmm. as you're watching the guy run to the end zone. So,
and my two linebackers here, well, I have three listed, but Errol Thompson, most people should already know about him. If people think Mississippi State's going to take a step back on defense, you do not know who Thompson is. He may be an All-American next year, but Kalyvon Chaisson and Anthony Hines, Shane, I feel a little bit robbed because both players, Chaisson hurt the first game of the year. I think Hines was hurt in the second game. They were lost for the season. I think these are the two next great linebackers here in the SEC. I'm really excited. Hopefully they make full recoveries in 2019.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound like an LSU homer, but that Chaisson is definitely right where he belongs. I think this is going to be a great defense next year. And it all starts up front, but it frees up Chaisson to do what he needs to do best, you know?
All right, Shane, the last thing I got for this episode, the SEC has announced the full lineup here for the SEC Media Days. This is obviously a ways out here, but still kind of exciting to think about and talk about, so I just want to make a quick rundown here. Opening day of SEC Media Days 2019 will be Monday, July 15th. And we're going to have Dan Mullen, Ed Orgeron, and Barry Odom. They're going to be the three coaches for day one. Things really get heated up on Tuesday, July 16th. We got Kirby Smart, Matt Luke, Jeremy Pruitt, and Jimbo Fisher. That'll be a nice day. Wednesday, the Nick Saban day. It's always a great one. Wednesday, July 17th, Nick Saban, Chad Morris, Joe Moorhead, and Coach Will Muschamp. That'll round out Wednesday. And finally, Thursday, July 18th, Gus Malzahn, Mark Stoops, and Derek Mason. That's probably going to be a dud day, but the last day always is kind of a dull event.
Hey, but I love them, man, because when you've made it through that, I mean, when you've made it through the dark days of summer and you start finally getting, you seeing them, well, they used to do it on the beach. Where are they meeting this year?
It's back in Alabama.
Ugh, okay. Well, it was fun when they were moving around. There was talks that they would go to different cities, you know, and I was hoping they'd do something like that. So, Hoover, is that right?
Yeah, Hoover, Alabama.
Yeah, so Pruitt, he's just going to stay at the mother's house so he can go over and check it out. But I'm looking forward to it, man. Day one. I mean, when you haven't had any football, and then you start off with Dan Mullen, Ed Orgeron, and Barry Odom, which is under NC, you know, AA bands right now. I mean, it just kicks off July 15th. It's going to be pure fire. So I'm looking forward to that one. Like you said, day two, I mean, I love seeing Pruitt, fast talking Jimbo, Kirby. I think they had to move Matt Luke somewhere. So yeah, throw them in there. Let's see. Day 17th, Saban, Morris, Joe Moorhead, Will Muschamp. I like that crew. I think that'll be good. Are they going to lead? Is this the order? They'd be crazy not to have Saban last, or everybody's gonna leave. Thursday, Gus, Mark. Ooh, yeah, get Gus in there early so everybody go home. Just kidding, Kentucky and Vandy fans. Oh, I love it, man. I'm kind of curious. Have you heard any topics that may be coming up? I'm wondering. Is it going to be like the transfer portal talk? Is there anything that you see coming up that may get brought up during these media days, or is it just too far out right now?
Well, I think it's too far out, but there's also what's called the SEC spring meetings. Mm-hmm. And I believe that happens in March, and that's kind of where the off-season debates start getting going. That's where you see every damn year they ask, will Auburn move to the SEC East? You know, I mean, that's where that shit starts getting going. And last year, if I recall, the biggest at least I thought was one of the biggest moments of SEC Media Days happened because of damn what people were saying outside of it when they were, you know, challenging Jeremy Pruitt for his time there at Georgia and what went down, and then that turned into like a whole day's thing. So sometimes the moments kind of happen there at the event. For the time being, I can't think of much aside from, like you said, maybe the transfer portal. That could be a conversation, but we're still
the targeting rule change, something you've talked about.
Yeah, we're just not seeing a ton of, I think it would be a bigger issue if guys were jumping from SEC to SEC school, but we're just not even really seeing a ton of that at this point.
Yeah. Well, I'm just curious if what's coming down the pipe, because usually there's one or two big things that they want to address at National Media Days. And like you said, you really don't hear about it till springtime, which makes sense if they're meeting. So they're probably talking there, and then we'll get something out of it. But anyway, it's fine. It's fun to see the dates, see the coaches, when they're going to be there, so you can make plans, because I'll be watching. I love watching Media Days.
All right, Shane, that's all I've got. Do you have anything before we hop off here?
One thing I wanted to bring up here. This was, remember I was trying to bury Morris the other day and said what he was doing was wrong. And I said, if anybody's got any help, let me know. Well, one of my buddies reached out to me, and he's got a buddy, and I won't tell you what school he's at, but he's a senior associate AD. So he's up there, knows the rules. And he was dying laughing because Tennessee put out a video, and it had all our coaches, not just one. It had all the coaches. Even Slim Jim was out there coaching them up. So I was like, delete, delete. You know. But he says this, most can attend and some will conduct workouts this time of year, not much restricting them. So a little vague, but just goes to show that there's really no rules, especially in the winter workouts, because I couldn't even find information on winter workouts in NCAA. So any of you guys that are planning on staying up 2-3 in the morning reading the rules, don't waste your time.
So moral of the story is Shane just got the damn University of Tennessee on probation, so he's backtracking as fast as he can, huh?
That's it, man. You ain't filming this, are you?
But that just goes to show how full of shit Nick Saban is when he's, you know, he's like, I don't know anything. I don't.
Oh, yeah.
The players are gaining weight. What? You know. Like, greatest coach of all time, but he's very dishonest when it comes to things like that.
I think, and I've listened to a lot of coaches talk about Saban, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's like, you know how they got like secret rooms behind the walls, you know, and like the eyes of the players move, and Nick's just looking. Every office has got a couple of people so Saban can keep an eye on his assistants, you know. That's what I want to believe happens in Alabama. It's just that they got tunnels for Saban to run around and make sure everybody's doing their job. So.
All right, Shane, I think that's a good note to go on out on. Thanks for joining me as always. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We really appreciate it, and we'll catch you next week.
All right, see you guys. Go Vols.